Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Kind of an emergency pod tonight.
Emergency pod.
It was too good. Yeah. The golf was too good. We, of course, wrapped it in the last
I went
show.
Home and we came back
yes,
to do this.
Pretty yeah. much. We are kind of trying to transition wrap-up of events to our live show, which if you guys haven't seen yet, it's live on Twitter as soon as the...
We'll do it live.
As soon as the coverage ends. But for the big events, we're going to, of course, recap them on the podcast. But yeah, the replays of those live shows are available on Periscope and on Twitter. We may rehash, cross over some takes. They may be kind of similar, but it's not possible for us to just take the audio from the live show and put it on the feed, which a lot of people have suggested, but... having said all that, DJ Pie had a nice little break for dinner, and we're back, and we're ready to get back to it.
Yeah, bienvenidos.
okay, so we had some trouble with the audio on the live show, but we got my welcoming from the starter.
We did, yeah. You came in really hot.
We need that starter to follow us around everywhere. I love that guy. I absolutely
bienvenido.
Love it.
The WGC Mexico Championship. Phil Mickelson.
Man, how much fun is it to go to Mexico, by the way? This week, I had such a blast watching this tournament.
Oh, I mean, this was like a great. I mean, not even just PGA Tour golf. It's a weird week because there's no opposite event, an opposite field event this week because of Puerto Rico and the hurricane there. The European Tour is in South Africa, so like some guys like just don't even have anywhere to play this week. If you really, you know, like the Web Tour is not active this week, but. Man, all of the tournaments that actually were played this week, did they deliver?
That was phenomenal.
I'm fired up, man.
I can't remember the last... I was thinking about it today. I don't know the last time I had a week like this. I was so excited to watch golf today.
You got here a little early
today.
Yeah,
I did. I was so pumped.
I was going to maybe play golf this morning, but I was like, I don't think I can. Like, this is too good of a leaderboard. This is the tournament we've been waiting for. And I think we probably said five different times, like, this event feels like the start of the PGA Tour season. This one actually... Kind
it
of did
totally.
For like a like it was like the first really really exciting. I mean, there's been like eight playoffs already this year, but this one was different.
There's
this
been like 45 events already this year.
That's also accurate. But Phil and JT in a playoff. Tyrrell Hatton was very close to making the playoff as well. JT holing a shot on the 72nd hole to make it in the playoff. Phil birding 15 and 16 to get into the playoff as well. I think. How many moments from this week alone are going to make Sarsen's like year-end 2018 moments? It might
be
like eight.
For real, yeah. I mean, there might be eight just from today. I mean, it was just insane to watch down the stretch. I think I've been obsessed, I'm sure you have too, and everybody else has, with this whole idea that, you know, eventually maybe if we're lucky we'll get, you know, a Tiger versus one of the guys from this new generation in a playoff or something. And... obviously, it wasn't Tiger, but that's what it felt like to me today. Was
the second best thing you could ask for.
Totally. And it was watching, you know, it's been such a transition period over the last, I don't know, 4 to 5, 6 years, something like that, between kind of the Tiger, Phil, Ernie, VJ generation and now, you know, Jordan, Justin, Rory, all those guys. And this was the biggest clash I can remember for sure of those two generations. God, it was so... just so fun to watch.
Phil is almost quite literally double JT's age. Phil's
he's like
47.
40, almost 48.
Yeah, and JT's 24, I think. Maybe he's 25.
Yeah.
And
the most.
I would have loved to have seen if it was Phil against like Rory, like what that gamesmanship kind of would have been like.
Yeah,
if it was
pretty,
different.
It seemed pretty cordial.
It was
right?
pretty, yeah, it was pretty chummy, but not as chummy as Phil was with the
with
CEO,
the CEO.
walking down the fairway of the only playoff hole, the first playoff hole. So let me ask you, have you always...
Just think about that real quick, just juxtaposing, you know, he was playing with Sharma, the 21-year-old kid from India,
are
playing
we just
his first
try,
tour event.
Try not to say his first name, is it we Shabanker?
Yeah.
I just don't know how to say it.
I know.
I can read it.
Exactly. I'm going to remove myself from the situation. Sharma is out there, and he, you know, understandably nervous, slow start, blah, blah, blah. Phil's in a playoff, hasn't played in a playoff in, what did you say, like 13 years?
Yes.
Or something?
Won a playoff.
Or hasn't won a playoff in 13 years. But he's out there literally walking down the fairway with his arm around the CEO, you know, running the tournament. I mean, it was just insane. It was maybe peak Phil, honestly.
It might have been.
In a week full of potential peak Phil moments, that could have been it.
Oh, we got a lot of moments. But first I want to ask, have you always been a Phil fan, a guy that pulls for Phil, or do you pull for Phil kind of more in his later years than in prior years?
Undoubtedly, I pull for him more now than I ever have.
That you make content.
That might be part of it. But I don't know what it is. I think, you know, when I was younger and following golf, I think I had kind of the same complaints that, you know, a lot of people probably say. Definitely a lot of people who, you know, don't go to a lot of tournaments and don't hear him interacting with people. And he can come across, of course, you know, fake or superficial, or, you know, there's no way anybody can be that happy all the time and the thumbs up, blah, blah, blah. I have completely 180'd. I've never met him. I've never really talked to him or anything, but just hearing stories about him and seeing the way he interacts, I mean, I think he is completely just leaned into this persona that he's created for himself, where I think, honestly, I think the way to explain it is, I think he's just kind of bored. I think he's just done everything that there is to do in golf. He's met everybody. He's won almost everything except the US Open. And I think now he just is trying to keep himself active and engaged. And it's by doing all these crazy, weird things that just keep happening. It's just, there's too many things for it to be coincidence for him to not be just leaning into it.
Today, like when he goes out, he's going out and has to see the camera there. The camera couldn't be more in the way. And the fans are asking him for autographs and he turns and says in Spanish, like, I'm not going to sign. Never before is what he says. Nunca antes, like never before the round, I will sign after the round. But like, it's clearly playing it up. And
that's what I mean. What a perfect example.
Oh, there's like, we need to go through and rank the best film moments from this week alone, because there's legitimately might be 10 good ones.
Well, I'm trying to think. I've heard a million stories like that, and it's hard to share because you never know. You know, they're all secondhand. You never know which ones are true and which ones aren't. But the one that I've seen for myself, like with my own eyes, was at the President's Cup. I think it was at Memorial. They were doing team photos, and all the players were like kind of pissed because the hats that were part of the team uniform were kind of, you know, if you picture like the hats tour players wear, they wear the big structured, mm-hmm. you know, kind of tour
maximizing
hats.
The yeah, space yeah, for yeah, logos exactly. and stuff like that.
And the uniform hats were kind of the hats
kind of like we have,
like we wear Imperial, kind of yeah. floppy, you know, unstructured with a small logo on the front. And the players were not feeling it. Just, you can hear them talking to Fred Couples, who was the captain. You can hear them, you know, before the round or before,
the picture.
Pictures, yeah. You can hear him talking about, you know, what are these hats? I don't know. These feel weird. I'm not used to these. And Phil rolls up with a hat that looks identical from far away. You could never tell that it was different. But it was a big, kind of structured, fitted hat like he would wear every other week. And so one of the players finally notices it while they're taking pictures. He's like, Phil, you know, how come they all sound like kind of little kids, you know, how come Phil gets that hat? Phil, where'd you get that hat? He goes, oh, no, I just went to the merchandise tent and bought
no.
it. Yeah, he's like, I was looking, I thought it looked, you know, pretty much the same, so I'm just going to wear this one. And all the players go into mutiny, and they're like, well, no, if Phil gets that hat, then I want to wear that hat.
Well, I've never heard this.
And Fred Couples is trying to calm everyone down. He's like, guys, don't worry, we're going to get the hats taken care of. It's going to be fine. And that to me is like, again, such a moment where I think a lot of people would look at it and be like, oh my gosh, what a prima donna. And I look at it, I'm like, what a comedic
savage.
Genius.
Yeah.
Like that, what a pointless thing that nobody should care about. And he just blows it up into this hilarious like troll job, basically. It's just, he's quickly become my favorite player for that reason.
Do you think they charged him in the merchandise tent for that?
I don't know. He probably tipped well in the merchandise tent from all the other stories.
That's fantastic. What a great like microcosm of the President's Cup too. Like they're that worried about hats instead of the international team.
Exactly.
I don't think that happens at the Ryder Cup level. But all right. So I think
that was the same week, by the way, that he turned to the camera
and did the wink
and was like, "Yeah, you guys are going to want to watch this. Well, this is going to be pretty good." He tried to skip it over the water.
Oh, that's right.
And that's the kind of stuff where I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, man, he's done it all. He's just trying to keep himself interested.
That was the same week as the gif of him spanking Keegan Bradley around the ass.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think they mentioned on the broadcast this week about how Sharma came up to Phil and introduced himself, and Phil thought he was media. It is pretty funny. I'm not going to lie. It's so funny. God,
you can't blame the broadcast for beating that one up. That's pretty good.
That was good. We talked about
this. Even a moment like that, I have to kind of think. I'm like, well, now he's got me so far inside my own head. I'm like, man, was he trolling or was he being serious?
I don't think he would do that to it. He would maybe do that to like...
He asked Tyrrell Hatton how to pronounce his name, which is number 16 in the world.
But it's still fair. Like Tyrell, Tyrrell, is that like just like a British like accent on it? Sure. Tyrrell, I don't... That's a kind
maybe
of
it's
a fair
just
question.
Thorough, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they've never really, really met. But yes, Hatton is lower ranked in the world than Phil is. And Phil didn't know how to pronounce his name. It was pretty great. He went into a bush to hit a ball today.
Was it the same bush as last year?
It might have been.
I thought it was the same hole.
I think I said last year, if Phil ever writes a book, it needs to be titled 338 Yards to Unknown. and I think it was the same place. Yeah, it hits it out of there.
We can't forget that last year when he was in that bush, he took sprinkler relief, right?
That's right.
Which again...
And NBC was all over that. Totally. They called that. We're going to talk about NBC, which a stellar weekend for them.
Big shout out to NBC.
Seriously. And then hit it out of the woods and hit a fan. And was mad that the fan was standing there. Like he knew the fans were standing there, but didn't clear all of them out. And then he's kind of pissed, getting ready to play the next shot, and is just motioning for fans to get out of the way, saying,
"Sort of,
mucho, mucho." Like his broken Spanish is so perfect. Like I don't think that's the right word to use in that situation, but he's just waving and yelling, "Mucho, mucho" at them. And there's plenty of people, like plenty of interpreters there to help translate if need be. But right. He wants to show off his Spanish. Man, what else do you have from? What else are you remembering from today? I mean, the putt on 16 to tie the lead.
Was phenomenal.
He actually kind of ruined the JT moment for us here in the Kill House because
that's true.
He hit a shot that the great camera angle from NBC right behind him, showing like he's hitting it into a tree. We watched the slow mo replay. I still don't understand where he hit it. So we rewound and we're watching it in slow mo of the slow mo, trying to watch this ball clear. And then like we saw Twitter going absolutely apeshit and slowly caught up, and JT just dunked it on the 72nd hole.
I think shots like that were a good reminder. It kind of made me feel like when we were watching Bubba at Riviera a couple weeks ago, when you're just thinking to yourself, man, I've just missed this so much. This is so fun to watch. And yeah, shots like that over the tree, under another tree, I'm going to punch it under this branch, then it's going to rise and get over this branch. Like, I mean, that's the stuff that just... That's what makes it worthwhile for
it's
me.
It's so good, too, to just have the narrative gone of him not having won and, busting totally. Through. Now it's totally different when he's going to be back in contention. And it's, I don't know if that frees him up to be a little more reckless down the stretch or whatnot. But
if he would have lost, it would have been, again, it would have been the perfect
theater.
Phil loss.
Oh, yeah.
It
would
have been.
That lip out on 17 that he had, was it? The birdie. What was the long birdie putt he had that barely lifted
up? Oh, yeah. But there was that one. But then also just, somebody holing a shot from the fairway to beat him. that's
great.
How Phil is that? But
he also took over for Slugger White and just
he did,
was the
yeah.
rules official for Sharma on one of, like, instructing him on a drop. Like, I'm pretty sure it was like, I'm going to call rules official.
Oh, yeah, you could definitely do that.
And Phil just comes over and instructs him on how to drop it. And then I don't know if you saw this yet. In the press conference afterward, Doug Ferguson asks him if he thinks he's going to get to 50 wins. And Phil doesn't let him finish the question. He's, oh, I'll get there. Oh, yeah, I'll get there.
But that could be like when he, the Euro betting thing where, he could be including like member guests or something like that. He could be setting someone up for a sucker bet there.
Could be some crooked scoring there.
Do you think he gets to 50 wins?
That's a lot.
Seven more?
That's a bold claim to just like flippantly say at 47, I'm going to win seven more times.
But it's also one of those things that nobody's going to follow up on or care if he doesn't come up. So what's he supposed to say?
I mean, seven wins going forward. That's like what JT's career to now, I think. Maybe he has eight, I think.
I think he might have eight.
That's a lot of wins.
That's a
ton of wins. I know he's won 43 times, but then that kind of shifts the scale, but... That's a lot. I would be surprised if he got to 50.
How I always kind of hesitate to bring up questions like this because I always feel like there's logic I'm not thinking about and things make more sense than they seem. But how about him winning on this golf course too, where it seems like you have to hit it dead straight?
Who does this golf course fit? I don't understand after 2 years.
No, I think it equally doesn't fit everybody, if that makes sense. I think everybody's so uncomfortable on it that anybody can win.
I'm surprised there's not more complaining about the course from the players.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll get to the golf course. Yeah, let's talk first. JT's hole out. I'm struggling to kind of think of a better non-major 72nd hole.
Shout out to Craig Perry.
Shot that I've seen live in my lifetime. Craig Perry was in the playoff, though, wasn't it?
In the playoff, yeah. R.I.P. Doral.
I think Justin Rae had the stat that no one had ever holed out from eagle on a par four since in the ShotLink era to win a tournament.
Man, I'm trying to think. I mean, it's
he didn't win, but...
Man.
That was... I mean, but are we going to end up forgetting about this because he didn't win? I think it's kind of a risk of that.
Totally, yeah.
It's kind of a... Again,
you had the best... case scenario for forgetting about it as far as Phil winning. I mean,
right.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to, you know, when you're looking at Phil winning at 47 and 8 months or whatever he is, breaking his drought. I mean, yeah, I think if Tyrrell Hatton wins, then maybe we remember it a little bit more, but wasn't the case. But he almost did.
Yeah. He almost did. JT what seemed bad. Pretty,
spike mark or bump or ball mark or I don't know what that was.
Yeah. Poa. People are saying the Poa was coming up and that wasn't a spike mark. I don't know, but his putt on 18 hit something almost immediately and went straight up in the air and didn't get there. It was, he is the most dramatic ever with spike mark claims.
I'm in.
He had one at the Honda last year that I still think about. but I like Hatton too. I think I've met him briefly. He's a really nice guy. And I think his antics kind of entertain me more than they do bother me. I don't know. That stuff doesn't.
The more characters we can have, the better.
Come on. That guy is.
Yeah.
It also kind of sticks with me. His, in the Awkward Reporter video, I forget what the Awkward Reporter, the European Tour video that went pretty viral last year. I forget what the reporter did to him, but his reaction afterward was just genuine shock, of feeling of awkwardness for the reporter. I can't believe that guy just did that. Maybe that weighs on me, but that guy had a really good time with that. JT seemed pretty okay with the result. I mean, didn't seem too bothered. He wasn't supposed to be there at all.
He's won what, 7 of 32 events?
Yeah.
I think he'll be okay.
But he was 11 shots back going into the weekend, shot 62, 64. And I think he may have missed the cut if it was a normal event.
Probably close.
Makes it into a playoff. It's pretty remarkable.
There's a lot of bottom fat at these events typically. There's a lot of guys to check out pretty early.
There is. Are we?
Let's talk about Phil's putting, by the way. He was fourth this week in strokes gained putting, and there were so many putts that thankfully there are no tapes of all the things I was saying to you while we were watching the broadcast. But these are the ones he misses. And he made all of them. He was, I think, led the field in scrambling or second in scrambling, up and down 18 for 22. I mean, it was awesome, and that's the difference. I mean, those are the rounds. It seems like when he really gets a lot of momentum going, that's what kills it. Misses a 3-footer, he misses a 5-footer, he misses whatever, and he just made all those this week, and he's made all of them pretty much. I mean, the last couple of weeks
I feel like he's gotten better at those over the course of his career. It felt like in the early 2000s and mid 2000s, he won a bunch of majors there between 2004, 2005, and 2006, but that he always had that 3-footer that he missed and then would maybe even miss the comebacker that, just that horrible meltdown. But I feel so much better when he stands over a short putt now.
It's almost like when guys hit. That period in their career where age just kind of catches up to him and their putting goes.
Right.
It's almost like Phil is post-age at this point.
He had a really good putting year last year, if I remember right, too. So,
it's a good remarkable. Sign. More Phil is good for everybody.
I think it answers a lot of Ryder Cup questions, this win. I mean, the year. He's never needed a captain's pick.
Next topic.
Yeah, seriously.
And not only that, but him in France is going to be, it's going to be the best.
Oh, he's going to be speaking French to people.
100%.
Yes.
Phil needs to come out with kind of Rosetta Stone for kind of half-assed learning of another language.
Franglish.
Yeah, but Spanglish. You only need, it's Rosetta Stone if you only need four sentences to say.
Mucho. In case you couldn't tell, that was a hell of a Sunday for Callaway, and that is probably an understatement. It started with Callaway staffer Michelle Wee's incredible round, 65, to win the LPGA HSBC Women's World Championship in Singapore in dramatic fashion. We're going to talk a bit about that a bit more later in the show, capped off by Phil's playoff win at the WGC Mexico Championship. Both Phil and Michelle are cruising to victories with full bags of Callaway clubs, both gaming the Rogue or Rogue Sub-Zero driver and fairway woods. Phil even has a Rogue hybrid. I saw him use that. X-Forged irons, Odyssey putters, and graphene-infused Chrome Soft X golf balls. And add that to the huge multi-month signing of Club Pro Guy for Callaway's Strata brand. It's proof that it's set up to be a monster year for Team Callaway. For more details and specs on Phil and Michelle's winning bags, visit CallawayGolf.com today. Let's get back to DJ Pi. Is it fair to ask if JT's the best player in the world right now?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely fair to ask. I don't know what the answer is.
No, I don't either.
I mean, as Tron will tell you, Dustin is the greatest player of all time. Sure. So,
a lot of people are having some qualms.
Depends. Well, it depends what your range is, right? Yeah. You know, if your range is the last 2 months, then yeah, it's not even close.
People are having some qualms about the official world golf rankings. How has JT won 7 of his last 32 events and not the number one player in the world? It's like, well, I mean, Dustin's also won like 5 events the last like 55 weeks or something that are all pretty big, if you ask me. Great fields. I mean, I don't know. I don't get too hung up over like number one versus number two versus number four. It's not really what the rankings are designed for. They're not a power rankings. It's a mathematical formula. I don't think that's like the issue with the rankings, but I don't know. It's a good question.
Well, and I mean, the other thing is Dustin, all the things JT has done, I mean, Dustin basically did last year as well.
Right.
You know, and all that is still on the books.
And so people are complaining about Rahm's ranking. It's like, no, dude, look at the results,
right,
man.
Exactly.
Like he is not only winning, but he's, you know, finishing top three, top five, all over the place. Like that has extreme value.
So at times like this, I always like to go to the Sagarin rankings.
Oh, yes.
Back to my golf week days.
Talk dirty to me.
And for those that don't know the difference, basically the official world golf ranking is a 2-year window, all based on points and strength of field and all that stuff. The Sagarin rankings is a 1-year window, and it's all based on head to head. So, you know, if you finish second in a 63-man event, then you're going to be, you know, 62-1 for that week or whatever the math ends up to be.
I'm following.
Typically, I ride pretty hard for this. I'm looking at it right now, and it's getting a little hard
a little
to justify.
Suspect.
Who do you think is number one?
Tyrrell Hatton.
Paul Casey.
Okay. I can see that.
Can you get down on that?
I can see that.
Number two, Patrick Cantlay.
Okay. What's the window in this again?
1 year.
Okay. Wow.
Patrick Cantlay's 1-year head-to-head record, 1,580 wins against 338 losses.
That's what happens when you make every single
cut.
That's
pretty good. Literally. Number three, Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
No surprise.
I can see that.
Number four, Ricky Fowler.
Okay.
Kind of a surprise. I feel like I haven't heard a lot from him lately.
He's always there, though.
Number five, Justin Rose. Can feel that.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Number six, Jordan Spieth. Tony Finau, Hideki, Rahm, Jason Day. Note I haven't said Justin Thomas yet.
Whoa.
Matt Kuchar, Brooks Koepka.
Oh, my God.
And then Justin Thomas.
Okay. But I mean, so basically
number
just says,
13.
Like, I mean, if you miss cuts, though, that kills you, right?
Totally.
You lose to 100 people.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's, I don't know. It's kind of like, what do you judge a player on? I see the value in that, but I almost feel like you should kind of throw out like the bottom five results. I don't know.
Yeah,
I haven't thought this through.
I can see that.
But
yeah,
like,
yeah,
golf is, I mean, a really bad week is not any different than like a mediocre week, if that makes sense. Like you're just,
right.
You're kind of out of it. So,
yeah.
Just out of curiosity, where does Alex Noren rank on this list? Just out of curiosity.
Stand
I'm
by.
Not trying to stoke the flame here.
Scrolling.
I'm looking for a new Noren, actually. I may make Tyrrell Hatton the new Noren. I'm just trolling
scrolling.
For the record. Don't anybody.
28.
Okay.
He's between Brandt Snedeker and Louis Oosthuizen.
Okay. I kind of like this. We should check in on the Sags more
Sags
often.
Sags are great, especially if you're looking to gamble and
like
make money. This is your heat map.
That's
a better well.
That's a bunch better power rankings than the world golf rankings are. But yeah, people need to stop treating the rankings like they are a power rankings. So
agree.
All I can say is I'm happy.
Or we should start our own power rankings.
We should do that. We should totally do that. I'm happy he and JT and DJ are American because
that's no doubt
a pairing I'd like to see. Probably won't happen, but all right. So we mentioned Hatton. Just wanted to note Cabrera Bayo and Kierdek were both awesome. It was great to have like a truly international mix.
There was some world in the World
Golf
Championships.
There was some world. It was not in the United States, which is a rarity. and there were some big names at the top from all over the place. So that was entertaining.
If you could put a WGC anywhere in the world, where would you put it?
I would love. So in my head, I say I would love to put one in Australia.
Yeah.
But I, every time that like something like this happens, I'm like, oh, I'd love like more Asian events. They happen in the middle of the night. People don't watch them.
It's true.
I probably don't stay up and watch them, and a lot of players won't go to them. There's a reason why a lot of these events are in North America. I mean, people are talking about.
Well, we can just shoot from the hip. There's no consequences to what we're saying. So yeah,
we should. And people are saying we should put one in South Africa. It's like, man, you're not going
to
get.
It's hard to go Honda, Johannesburg,
right?
To you know,
Rory
Tampa.
Just skipped this week, and he's in Florida, I assume, right now. Like it's you're not going to get guys. You know, the WGCs aren't. They're great cash grab. They're great for world rankings, but they're not essential for a lot of these guys. And
for sure.
Like some of these guys chopping this off this year was kind of interesting. Spieth was a late commit to it. He wasn't positive he was going to go. I'm not positive how much the players really like Mexico City. Like I've heard some of the caddies saying that they were not allowed to leave the hotel this week. And it's just kind of, I don't know. You know, a lot of those things kind of are factored into whether or not you want to go to an event, whether or not you feel comfortable in a place. And, you know, there's jokes about the food and like what it does to your system and all that stuff. It's like I said, there's a reason why they have one in Akron every year. It's because the players don't complain and they go collect their money and it fits in the schedule. So
there's that TGI Fridays in Akron too.
It's popping. So I think Mexico is a happy balance of, hey, we got one outside the US. It's an important market for golf and for it's cool event in everything like watching the fans and watching the players interact with the fans and the way the fans treat the golfers and just the crowd noise and no idiots yelling. Like it seems really cool. It's like a fun change of pace in so many
respects.
It feels
kind of untainted almost. Like the event hasn't existed long enough for people to screw it up.
Right. And it feels like, and maybe the TV just, they do a good job kind of displaying it, but I feel like the people that are there really treat it like a special event.
Totally.
They're super excited.
I mean, last year I only basically watched a little bit throughout the week, but mostly today. But I remember watching last year. I mean, fans were turned up. It was so awesome to watch.
And they got that one volunteer that's pumping people up.
Exactly.
Like, I like it. In that same vein, like I think we were kind of both rooting for, a lot of people were rooting for Sharma today, sleeping on the 54-hole lead, and it kind of, this identity crisis or struggle that WGCs are, it's like, I mean, it's usually, you know, limited fields, and it's only the top players in the world, so it's usually the rich get richer and kind of separate themselves even more from, like, the next tier of players. So to see a guy in his first career PGA Tour start have a chance to win. I was rude. Like, that would have been such a cool story.
Awesome. I mean, and it's kind of a dream. I mean, that's basically a dream scenario for the tour, for the tournament organizers, for all the other tours that are involved in the tournament. I mean, everything. Because it's,
maybe not the networks, but
yeah, maybe that's fair. I think it worked out okay.
Yeah, they're good.
But, you know, someone like Sharma, it's not really like a lack of access to the WGCs, I don't think. I mean, there are a shitload of names in there that it's hard to find people that watch too much more golf than you and I. And I guarantee there are about 15 names on this leaderboard that I would not be able to match up with the photo of the player.
Correct.
So it's not really, lack of access. It's just a matter of, you know, typically the best players are the best and that's why they keep winning these things and just snuffing those dudes out. So, it was awesome to see Sharma play so well. I don't know what you can do to promote that or what you can do to really kind of make sure that it keeps happening other than just
play it at a golf course like this.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's fair.
Chipotle
yeah.
Golf Club. By the way,
TPC Chipotle.
The Golf Club de Chapultepec or whatever it's actually called. The subliminal advertising. I literally got Chipotle as soon as the broadcast was done today. Like I had to, like it was in my head the entire week. So, and we touched on it, but along that same vein, it's so cool to watch professional players play on a course that, if we're talking about from a strictly golf course perspective, has no business hosting a tournament of this magnitude. Like it just
like
doesn't.
Your opinion, man.
It is my opinion, but I mean, my God, you can look at it. It's about 6,200 yards when you factor in the altitude, which is hilarious. That's great. I've always pictured golf courses I grew up on, I'd be like, that'd be so cool to watch pros just come play it and not. And the course protects par decently well, which isn't important, but it's interesting to watch guys, you know, play a really short course, and 16 under is not that low of a score to win.
No,
but well, it's not necessarily like great architectural elements that create the challenges. It's more conditions and trees, really, overhanging trees.
And I mean, I think I'm probably loosely quoting Phil here in saying that, you know, the recovery shot is the most interesting aspect of golf. And
shout
so
out Club Pro guy.
For yeah, there were some punch outs that could have used some help.
This
today.
Is a big punch
Terrell
out.
Terrell Hatton
week.
With a huge it's punch just, out. His punch out mistake kind of cost him the tournament.
Yeah, this today. Is true. This is true.
That's
yeah,
why
this
you practice those things.
This is why we should have had, he should have got a sponsor's exemption.
Yeah,
but
I totally agree.
Maybe that's what Phil was in the CEO's ear about on that playoff hole. Like
sponsor exemptions?
Yeah, for Club Pro guy.
It's possible. But it's hard to say. I mean, from a viewer's perspective, I absolutely loved watching today because I love watching guys hit it in horrible spots and try to find their way out. That's, I think, as exciting as it gets. So from that perspective, I think it's awesome. From a lot of other perspectives, I think it sucks. I'm, you know, borrowing from Andy Johnson, the fried egg, who said some great stuff on our live show right after the last putt dropped, which is basically, you know, you mentioned the conditioning. When you have that many trees, there's no way you're going to get sunlight, airflow, all that stuff to grow grass the way that you need to. So that's why you see a lot of kind of shitty looking spots out there.
Which again is kind of awesome though.
Agree. Totally agree. From and it's kind of the anti Augusta effect as far as, you know, people watch the Masters and then they freak out when they see a brown patch on their club and golf, you know, they go blow up their super and golf gets more expensive and you know, it's just this whole horrible trickle effect.
Brown's not necessarily bad.
No, not at all.
This golf course, it might be, though.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, just like patches underneath trees that are clearly like, all right, we just can't grow grass here. But at the same time, don't hit it there. But
yeah, it was. So from that perspective, it's, you know, I could kind of see it go either way. From the whole, you know, Andy's width and angles test, not great, obviously.
Not so much.
From that perspective, you know, I think his line was, you know, imagine if you watch tennis and all they did was just hit it to the center of the court each time. That wouldn't be very exciting. And so the idea is, you know, angles and working the corners and doing all that stuff. This golf course definitely didn't have a lot of that. However, I don't think that ever really comes across all that great on TV. Anyways, even if you have the most strategic golf course, you have to do such a good job of storytelling and explaining right. that and doing that. And, you know, NBC did a great job, but when you have that many players on the course at the same time, when you have that much shit going on all at once, it's really hard to do that. And so
it's hard to stop the action and like totally, really yeah. outlay the elements of a shot value.
Which I think is, so all of this is kind of a really long way of explaining why I don't mind the course / kind of really like it. Just because I think it's entertaining as hell, and it's
a great change of
like,
pace.
Picture that versus Doral.
No.
I mean, it's like, ugh.
It's my take is I hate the golf course so much that I love it. Like it's so unfitting for a tournament like this that it's great. It really yeah. is. Like it really is. It's like, all right, this is a true look. We all got to play the same course, and
totally.
We're all getting minimum 50K to be here and getting a ton of ranking points. Like, let's go have fun. And the guys handle it pretty well. Maybe it's just us that kind of dislike it. Pros don't mind narrow. They really don't. That's a lot of them kind of view that as a good test and a good, you know, they don't necessarily like to think as much as we would like them to think. So,
well, and you mentioned, you know, so the winning score was what, 16,
mm-hmm.
which is not crazy.
It's, no.
If anything, kind of high.
Yeah.
For, well, maybe not high. I mean, it's kind of right on.
Right around the middle.
Right on. Yeah. Right on par with everything else. I mean, it seemed like guys were driving all over the, like driving greens all over the place.
Like and par
hitting,
fours that aren't supposed
every
to be
par
drivable.
Five.
Yeah.
But there were six eagles total.
Really?
For the week, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. There were six eagles in round four.
I was going to say, because it's like Sharma back. Eagled the first hole yeah. twice. No,
26
but like,
eagles for the week.
Some of the par fours are just clearly not like risk-reward drivable par fours that guys are like trying to drive and almost getting close, like 400 yarders. It's kind of, that's the part that's hilarious, but just, I mean, the bunkering is terrible. Like,
well, and so
really
the,
bad.
The other thing that I think is interesting, and again, I'm definitely not saying anything new for anybody who reads Andy's stuff or follows his stuff, but he's big on beating this drum that, you know, the way that you test really long players is not by making the golf course longer. I think that's
right.
Probably one of the biggest mistakes golf ever made was, man, these players are hitting the ball so far. Like I think we need to
you move the tees back.
Yeah, we need to move these tees back. Really, really punch these long players in the face. It's like, no, that does everything except punch them in the face. That just rewards them even more. And so that's where you think, you know, Sharma wasn't somebody that hit it super long. Mm-mm. I don't know where Hatton is kind of on the spectrum. It doesn't seem like he's a bomber.
No.
Phil obviously moves at JT. But, it's a mix of guys. That's
what we want.
I know.
So legitimately.
Brian Harmon, T5.
I wouldn't move this. I would not move this. No. I hate it so much that I love it and that it's a perfect disaster. It's great.
Yeah, I'm in.
The altitude factor is great. NBC does such a good job, too, of laying out what the yardage really actually is. Otherwise, guys hitting irons from 300 yards into par fives would look kind of dumb. But you do the math, it's actually 250 and... it's not that tough of a carry. But.
As far as NBC goes, by the way, I don't think I get kind of self-conscious that we're,
too hard on
that
CBS.
We're being unfair, like disproportionate. I could not have been more locked into coverage.
It's great.
And I'm locked into coverage watching Sharma, who's a dude I've never heard of before this week, and Tyrrell Hatton, who I could kind of, can kind of take or leave as far as watching on TV.
Sure.
But I'm locked in, and it's because they just do such a, it is better. It's not close.
Really is.
And they didn't even have Johnny. They had Peter Jacobson, who I'm not, usually not a giant fan, but I thought he did a great job.
He's better in the booth than as the color guy than
Dan Hicks is so fucking good.
That
he's
guy has
phenomenal.
Grown on me a lot. Yeah. I used to think he was pretty dull, but his call for JT's hole out was fantastic. His excitement just seems very genuine.
Yeah, whereas, I think you just connect with him. I think Nance is... almost like a victim of his own success at this point.
He's too big of a deal.
Like he's playing, I think Tron said it, he's playing the character of Jim Nance at this point. And it's,
true.
Yeah, that's hard. He's in a hard spot. I don't really know what you can do. But Dan Hicks you watch Dan Hicks, you're like, okay, cool. I've met that guy. Yeah. I know that guy. I'm listening to what he has to say.
But maybe I just don't notice it, but do they use music and stuff between, like for transitions between segments and stuff?
The whole
thing just seems so much less produced, right? It's so much more golf.
Which takes so much more producing
to
do that.
Exactly.
They don't lean on... I'll point again, I mentioned it in the live show, I mentioned it on Twitter, but I'll point to something so simple as Phil blew it. I forget what hole it was. It was like 13 or 14. And he blew it way wide left, just like left the face open and blew it wide left. And they had an ultra slow-mo... however many frames per second shot, tight shot of his driver. You can see it going off the face straight left. And they got into that shot and out of that shot in probably 7 seconds.
And told the story.
And it adds value. It makes you smarter as a viewer. It makes you, it makes you care about where the next shot's going. It makes you care about his next tee shot. It does all these different things that are so important. And they didn't take, CBS would have gone, to a 20-second transition of fans running around, and then now here's a shot of downtown Mexico City, and now here's this, and now okay, we'll take you back. This was just a moment ago, and it's such a hard thing to square on as far as just produce more or less. I guess I don't know how to say it, but just
it just
really just show golf.
We have no. I don't know. Maybe we do. Maybe inherently we do have a bias towards NBC Golf Channel and against CBS, but there's nothing personal. Our families don't my dad was never fired from CBS or something. I feel like people think that we have just a true bias, but if you can't see the difference between the way these last two weekends have gone, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. And it helps so much with Thursday, Friday on the Golf Channel to just have all of that NBC continuity there. I mean, because Chris Paisley was leading on Friday. Louis Oosthuizen was too, and Sharma was way up the leaderboard. What do you think the chances are going into that Thursday that there's a production meeting and guys are like, all right, guys, we got to get some Chris Paisley shots in there. Let's plan on this. No, they reacted to what was going on, and they're showing it every shot live for these guys in the latter half that afternoon. That's tremendous value that would just never happen on a CBS broadcast.
I've never really thought about it this way before, but if you give yourself kind of a quick scan, give your memory a quick scan of kind of the most exciting golf tournaments you've ever watched from a non-major perspective, I'm kind of struggling to come up with ones that are CBS broadcasts. And I think NBC almost kind of tricks you into thinking it's more exciting
maybe
than it is a lot of the time. And
that's a good thought. What's the first tournament you thought of, by the way?
I thought of the Players, Ricky winning the Players.
That's good. I thought of the Valspar in 2015,
which is an NBC event.
Yeah.
and I mean, part, I think of Bay Hill. I think of, you know, all these different things. And maybe it's part luck, you know, getting a draw of better events, but I don't think it's entirely luck. Yeah. I mean,
Travelers last year was CBS. That was really great, exciting.
Yeah.
Tour Championship. That's NBC. That's NBC. Good call. Wow. Really good point. Maybe it's Dan Hicks. He like, it's got a spell on us.
But you know, it's just, I don't know.
Okay. Well, we've been too nice. We did have one major criticism of the broadcast this week. The misuse of Bones. We got to say
that was a miss. That was a miss for sure. And Roger Raj, what's he got down there? I don't know what, I don't know. I don't know how they handle Bones. I mean, I got to think that they brought him in partially exactly for today, right? Like,
I would hope so, but I can picture.
I wonder if they got too deep inside their own head.
That's what I'm thinking.
Hey, we want to make sure that we feel ultra unbiased.
It wouldn't,
which
feel
I actually
right.
kind of respect them for missing on that side rather than being super biased on the other side.
I think maybe it was a conscious decision of we shouldn't have Bones commenting on Phil.
And they did bring him in a little bit
to ask him some specific questions, which was good. But
what
was the
whole thing that he was talking about? How good of a Jenga player Phil was.
I missed that.
If that's the case.
Yeah, but
I have to check the
like
tape on that one.
Coming up the 72nd hole, Phil is talking to his brother, his caddy, and like a great situation to kind of go to Bones. Like, hey,
what are they saying?
You've been in this spot with Phil. What does Phil say on the 72nd hole? Is he asking about like a trade going down in the NBA or something like that? You know, that's perfect.
I also wonder if Bones, and maybe you have more insight on this than I do, but I wonder if Bones is kind of tries to play a little bit of that close to the chest. Like,
maybe
he doesn't feel like he wants to betray
the code
stuff that Phil has said on course, and it's not his place to share that stuff. I don't know. It's a hard situation.
But if the thinking was, all right, you know, there's too much history there. We can't really have him there, or maybe there's a bias there. He was literally on Justin Thomas's bag less than
totally.
2 months ago.
That's
like, you made this point.
True.
I'm stealing
this
take from you, but he was on his bag and could be a future candidate. I legitimately have no answer of how long Jimmy's going to caddy for Justin.
I really hope Bones stays put.
Yeah,
no,
I do too. I'm biased in that.
I
mean,
him on TV.
He's great on TV, but Bones could potentially be a candidate for JT's bag in the future.
And he also could be a candidate for Johnny's job in a few years.
Ooh.
What about that?
Is that not going to go to Faraday?
I don't know, man.
It's such a waste if it doesn't.
That's another kind of CBS gripe. Or
NBC gripe.
Freudian slip. I'd say NBC gripe that they've way underused Faraday.
What are they doing? I don't really know what's going on there.
They have a little bit. I wonder if they're just kind of getting, you know, we've heard whispers. I think this is probably going to be Johnny's last year, maybe, or maybe next year.
Sounds like
either way, it's close to the end here. So I wonder if they're kind of running out the clock a little bit and have too many cooks for a second. And, you know, things have kind of worked themselves out. But
which, by the way, very surprised. I guess, I don't know. I shouldn't be, but, you know, I threw out like, man, really miss Johnny in this situation. And
people are not
into
it.
People did not agree. I think
people being anti-Johnny and anti-pushcarts are among the worst takes. And we got both of them hard this week.
Anti-pushcart is separate that I can't see their argument on. I can at least understand not liking Johnny Miller. But I want to challenge people to really listen to what he says.
Oh,
think
my
about
gosh.
It. I'm guilty of this. We're all guilty of this. Like, the 63 at the Open thing is way overdone. Like, the joke is overdone about him always saying it. Like,
I would say it more if I was him.
I would
if
probably
I had done
too.
That, I would get a tattoo that said that I did.
We
that.
Joke about it more now than he actually says it. So I think we can kind of let that go. But just, I challenge you to just listen to what he says and compare that to, like, with Faldo. Like, how many memorable things
we
can,
were sitting, was it Riviera, I think?
Yeah.
We were sitting, we watched golf. We sat on the couch right there and watched golf for probably 6 straight hours. We don't do a lot on Sundays.
No.
We probably watched golf for 6 straight hours, and Bubba was getting down to probably maybe the 17th hole or so. And I was kind of thinking about it, and I asked you, I remember, I was like, hey, can you remember one thing Faldo has said today?
No.
And we're both kind of drawing a blank, and it's because he's not taking really a stance. He's not sharing any great insights. And if you, oh my gosh, if Johnny was on that broadcast today, there would have been 15 things that I would have said, I didn't know this before he told me, or I didn't think of it that way, or that was hilarious when he said that.
And
or
it's subconscious
anything.
Too. It just kind of goes right into your veins. When you made that question or asked that question about Faldo, I thought of somebody, I read a tweet somewhere, somebody said, All right, Avatar is like one of the top five gross movies of all time. Can you name one line from that movie? Can you name or one character? That's what I think of Fauda at the end of every round. But like
fair.
Johnny provide, like, sure, maybe he gets on your nerves, and he says some things that are dumb overall and are petty and whatnot. But man, how much better is that than
again,
taking
miss
nothing?
On that side?
Yes. Oh, I'm totally in agreement. So again, if you dislike Johnny, I just challenge you when he's back to like. Just listen in and think like, all right, is this guy upping my entertainment value?
Well, and that's what I was going to say. So picture, you know, that's our biggest gripe with CBS, right? Is that, you know, the energy just gets sucked out of the broadcast and things kind of fall apart and you end up looking at your phone and all this stuff. And think about how many little things we've mentioned about NBC that just keep up all the time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Johnny's a perfect example of, let's say the action gets slow for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. They have all these little things that kind of fill in, you know, it just makes the whole thing so much better.
Yeah. You mentioned some of the cool camera shots they got in, you know, without it feeling like over-sponsored or over-produced and way too in on themselves. Like, they're just there to tell the story. And we need to do analysis on commercial time, NBC versus CBS. I don't know if it's like a tour mandated thing or all that. Still feels so dumb to me to see a PGA Tour commercial during the PGA Tour broadcast. Like,
it seems like they got a lot of young stars. I'm interested in learning more about.
That's the only way I learn about them is in those commercials. But
it did seem like they maybe front loaded commercials a little bit today.
I didn't notice
like
it as much near
the
end.
The end was pretty good.
But all right, I pretty much tackle. We have a couple more questions at the end, but before we get to those, I want to talk. I stayed up and watched LPGA last night.
Yeah, how was that?
Lit, man. We get some criticism for not covering the LPGA enough. Totally validated.
Very fair criticism.
Very, very validated. All right. We barely have enough time to cover PGA Tour golf. But it is an initiative for us for the coming year to get into more LPGA stuff. We're going to be attending an LPGA
coming
event
in a couple weeks.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Don't want to spoil it too soon here. I'm going to be hoping doing some really fun stuff with a couple of the ladies from the LPGA Tour. Very excited about that. But I stayed up and watched it and I was enthralled. But again, not to take it back to CBS. I don't know what the plug was. I think it was some kind of British feed that went straight to Golf Channel. But the production value was incredible. Like, just telling the story, building the drama. But even in the European style, it felt like a Sky Sports broadcast. It might have been one. I really don't know. But Angela Stanford was on the opposite nine and shot 29, and they got a camera on her and told the story before she even finished the nine. Like, that would just never, ever happen in a CBS broadcast. But Michelle Wee wins for the first time since 2014. Parallel line to Phil not winning for the first time since 13. Pretty amazing. Danielle Kang was up there. Nelly Korda. Lydia Ko made a run. Jessica Korda made a little bit of a run. I was entertained. That was a really cool golf course. The fairways were really wide and really entertaining. The green complexes were awesome. Watching the girls try to balance, like try to the Bermuda like was shining. Like, you could totally see where all the grain was going, and that part was really entertaining to me. And watching them strategically plot their way around golf courses was great. So I'm excited to get more LPGA.
What was the biggest difference watching the telecast for you between that and a tour event?
In
the style of play and all
they made stuff. Everything they looked at. They made every putt. Like, Daniel Kang was rolling in par, but like getting up and down from everywhere. So they're making bomb eagle putts. It felt like every putt was going in the hole. Like, it was honestly just a fantastic tournament. Michelle, we shot 65 to hold a 36 footer from off the green on the 18th to win it. I don't watch enough to really have like a full, you know, thing to compare it against, but it felt totally different in that. You know, they are like, Nelly Korda's hitting drives and like leaning left or right, and legitimately the ball was less than 5 yards from the center cut line of the fairway. Like, their accuracy is unbelievable. And I saw a couple missed fairways, shockingly, but it's their games are just more relatable than to somebody like you and I. Like, we
people who just hit a lot of fairways,
the distances and stuff, and just like what our dispersions should be. Like, that's what theirs actually are. And they're so tight. Like, everything is so tight. And we got a lot of work to do on the LPGA side. But, man, I got me excited.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say. Is a week like that where someone like Michelle Wee wins, it's so funny. It almost makes you feel or makes me feel like the way most people interact with the PGA Tour, which is, Yeah, I have kind of a passing knowledge of the players and the courses and the events, but I don't really pay attention unless someone big wins, which is
what happened.
What happened, exactly. And it totally makes me like
it was a Saturday night, and that's how I spent my time.
But that's where you know you can. It's just kind of fun to see that effect in real life because we're gonna watch every tour event no matter what for the most part. But it's fun to see, you know, when someone like Michelle Wee wins, it as self-conscious as I am about, you know, being kind of a casual fair weather fan, I'm still like, oh, wow, that kind of makes me like excited to go watch it now. That sounds even better.
Jessica Korda won last week in Thailand and her 19-year-old sister almost won this week. She was one putt away on the
which is crazy,
hole.
By the way. I remember when I was working for Golf Week, I went to LPGA Q school a couple times in Daytona Beach. And I remember, I think I went like the first year Jessica Korda was trying to get her card. And she had this sister, Nellie, who was, probably 12 at that time. And so that's why you said that. You're like, oh, yeah, Nellie Korda's playing really well. I'm like, I think you mean Jessica. Her sister's really young. She couldn't possibly be on the LPGA now. And I'm just getting old really fast.
For those that don't know the story, too, about Jessica Korda, she had surgery in the offseason. I might get the details wrong, but she had a massive overbite. And it was causing her big-time headaches and it was very difficult for her to sleep. She had surgery, like her jaw got broken into three places, and like they did something with her nose too for her breathing, and she's like been like her face has been numb for like months, and she looks totally different now. Like they reset her jaw, and like if you compare the two pictures, she just looks like a completely different person. She almost didn't recognize herself in the mirror, and she came back to Thailand in Thailand last week and won, like totally unexpected. Was expecting nothing out of her game.
We should make a video where one of us does that. See if it helps. If it helps the game.
Our golf game.
Yeah. It could take your mind off things. I don't know.
No, but free up a little bit. I think that Beth Ann Nichols wrote an article that was really, really interesting about it. And
Beth Ann and I share a birthday.
Oh, good info for the listeners.
That's my LPGA knowledge, basically. Yeah.
All right. Big Cat playing Valspar.
Whew.
Big week.
Huge
big tournament.
Week.
Man,
I'm kind of exhausted. I feel like I need a week to catch up. But
this
won't stop.
This is low-key like the best stretch of the PGA Tour season. Because it starts to get nice out. People start playing golf on the weekend instead of watching golf. And then it's like Greenbrier week. And so soak up this stretch. This is a really good stretch. I know we got major season coming up. But, man, it doesn't get much better of a stretch of like good PGA Tour golf than what we've had the last few weeks and these coming weeks.
So I was... I was kind of shocked to hear the Valspar thing, to be honest. I mean, I saw Bob Herrig wrote a piece, you know, basically listing out the reasons why Tiger should play Valspar. And Bob's from Tampa, and he definitely doesn't play it fast and loose, kind of with the rules or with the opinions or the, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. So when he wrote that, I was kind of like, oh, maybe he might know something here that, that everybody else doesn't. And, yeah, it turned out he was right. I love it, man. I'm so pumped. I think it's like the way he's playing, I think it's a perfect place for him to go play. I mean, I think he's going to ball strike it to death, hopefully. And I don't know how he's going to drive it. I think it's a little different than Honda. I really liked Andy. I'm borrowing a lot from Andy in this podcast, I feel like. But I really liked his whole theory on, hey, maybe Riviera was too open for him. And it's harder for players when they don't have a really, really, really defined, start line and finish line. It kind of makes their brains freak out a little bit and they end up driving it worse than when there's hazards on both sides. Tampa, I think, is kind of a mix of those two things, if I'm remembering it right. I've been there a couple times, but, you know, I think trees probably don't really, you know, kind of tree line fairways don't really feel the same as maybe hazards or OB or any of that. So I don't know where he's going to land kind of on that spectrum, but I don't know, man. It seems like a place where he can hit a lot of irons off tees, a lot of three woods off tees, and hopefully be in the mix.
But I'm also kind of thinking, you know how, like, if you ever have, like, a good round of golf and you sit around for a couple of days thinking about your
good
round of golf.
I need to go play again.
Thinking about your good round of golf and you go back out, it's never right there. You start tricking yourself. That's I'm not saying that's what Tiger's going through. That's what I'm going through with Tiger.
You kind of almost went full Camilo this week, by the way.
I almost did. Yeah. I actually kind of did go full Camilo this week. I'm just kind of getting in my head picturing Tiger contending, and we're probably more due for a slip back week. And I'm guessing on a course he doesn't have a lot of history
But what if he won? What if we had, I mean,
will Tiger win this year?
I was big, firmly in the camp of no, until, I mean, he's looked really, really good. I'd say yes.
Yeah. I'm struggling picturing where, though, if it's not like Memorial. I don't know. He started in Bay Hill would be
Bay Hill's
awesome.
I mean, yeah, that could be the place for sure.
I forget where I've heard, but I remember it being a pretty incredible.
I think maybe we'll, I mean, the Valspar thing's cool. Maybe that, you know, he's doing like a 1-4 thing or something. I don't know. You know, the whole rule on you got to play a new event. But I mean, maybe he adds a bunch of new stuff this year. I mean, he's not getting into WGCs. He's not getting, you know, there's
yeah
stuff like that. I hope he does. Maybe
John Deere.
Oh, God, how good would that be?
Would never happen. It's right before the British.
Hello world.
Yeah. All right. Got a couple questions I think we should get to.
Okay.
My buddy Brad Bachman. Which European player has the best chance to win a major this year, and which one will they win?
Fleetwood, right?
I like that. I said Rahm. I mean, it's kind of a default.
God, I always forget about Rahm.
Rahm is easy to forget.
I don't know
is European.
He's so fucking good. I don't know how I always forget about him, but I'm still going to say Fleetwood.
I said Rahm PGA. I think I picked Rahm to win the PGA. So
I'm going to say Fleetwood at the US Open.
Okay. He also asked this, hypothetically, if you had to wager the kill house on who will win the Masters, and you could have the quartet of DJ, Phil, Rory, and Rose, or the field, which are you riding with and why?
DJ, Phil, Rory, and Rose. I would take the field.
I'm taking the field there.
Spieth, JT.
Yeah. If you throw Spieth in that, Spieth's going to win like 20 Masters.
Tiger.
So.
Similar, that's a good question, though. I love questions like
that. That's a good question. And Joe Shearer asks, big one after the last 2 weeks, who are you taking, JT or Spieth? There's no criteria there. He just
says, that's a pretty open-ended ass question
JT
there.
Or Spieth?
I mean, like forever? Well, let's define the parameters.
We can make it whatever
we
want.
Let's define the parameter. You define the parameters.
No, I love it. I love it open like this. Who are you taking? You got
to seem in a fight?
You got to make
like
your case.
I'm Spieth. I don't know. I was talking to you about this earlier. This is such a like admittedly very stupid stance that I don't like and I'm self-loathing about. But every time I watch JT, it hasn't calculated for me how good he is.
Yeah.
I mean, I still kind of watch them. I'm like, you know,
the body.
Yeah,
language,
Rory
probably.
And Spieth and Dustin and all these other guys. You know, they're really the elites. And now I'm like, oh my God, no, they're not. Like, he is right there with all of them. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't clicked in my brain yet.
Imagine how excited we would have been if Rory was in the playoff today versus JT, and how like,
exactly.
Blase
I think that's kind
is.
Of what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Which is wrong on our
totally.
Part.
Totally.
Like it's we've gotten way too used to JT being in. This is his third playoff this season.
God.
Already. Like
Jesus.
Would have been his third win. I'm
still taking Spieth. In this weird open-ended question of which I don't really know what I'm committing to, I'm going to take Spieth.
So Porter has written about this recently and like, you know, should we have this conversation of who's better, JT or Spieth? What is...
It could get awkward because I don't know if you guys, they're actually friends.
Well,
they know each other.
What is Spieth better than JT?
Right now?
Spieth's putting can be kind of misunderstood. He's like a really good mid-range putter.
His short putts are not great.
Not great.
I mean, his iron
JT is
iron
a
play.
Really, really good putter.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not really looking at the numbers, but I feel like JT drives it better.
Yeah.
I feel like Spieth hits his irons better. And I feel like maybe their putting kind of cancels each other out in a weird way.
Yeah. Along the same vein, I think it happens too frequently that we forget how good Jordan is, and we kind of did that.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, in 2016,
totally.
And that, I mean, last year 2017 was spectacular. He won a freaking major last year. Like, that's not a small. He won like 2 majors ago. He won a major. So
I
there's
mean,
no
I,
death of Jordan.
I was thinking about it today.
Here.
Think about how close he is to having like 6 majors. I'm not joking.
He almost won the Open at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
He was second at the PGA in 2015 at Whistling Straits. He should have won the 2016 Masters. Like,
2015 Masters, he's in the final group too. I mean, he got his doors blown off. Or 2014.
Correct, yeah. So it's not a... I mean, at the same time, like Jack Nicklaus
yeah,
has
no,
like
no, no, no.
36 yeah. top three finishes in majors that aren't wins or something like that. So.
Well, Jack would have counted Spieth's 2 U.S. Junior wins as
this is
majors
true.
As well.
This is true. Man, we got a ton of questions. We asked too close to the recording time. Here's another good one from Burke, Burke's Defco.
Shout out to Burke.
From now till the end of the season, who would you take, Tiger or Phil?
Oh, What a good question.
It's Phil.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah, it's Phil. But we've also seen Phil kind of burn himself out.
Yeah,
as well. So
throwing footballs into the
stands. Exactly. Exactly. Who knows? He could take up like falconry or something. I know he's big in with Big Greenbrier. Maybe he gets deep in the falconing scene. He doesn't even want to play golf anymore.
D Johnson Swag asked, "How butthurt were you when your crush JT didn't win? Will you attest?"
That was directed at you.
Yeah, I know that. Will you attest to who I was rooting for in the playoff?
Yeah, he was pretty pumped to see Phil.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Ah, I was rooting for Phil. Yeah. That's a much better story.
Yeah, yeah.
JT's won a lot already. Like, I feel like honestly, JT was like rooting for Phil to be in that playoff.
Many people on the live show said JT threw the event. Which is a very spicy take.
That is a spicy one, but that one's taken too far, obviously. But I think legitimately I don't want to say he's bored with winning regular tournaments already, but, but kind like in Korea, it was weird how disinterested he was in that tournament. Disinterested isn't the right word. He was just so worn out, so fatigued. He was so ready to get back home that it didn't really even register with him that he won. And, you know, we won last week in Honda. I'm not saying he's like completely bored with the winning tournaments, but I think he was kind of like pumped to be in the arena with Phil. Like, that has to be a childhood dream of some kind, and probably cooler experience, especially knowing he was 11 shots off the lead and shouldn't have been there. That was probably more of a thrill to him than winning last week at Honda.
Plus, he probably had side action with Phil.
Probably did. Probably did. I think that was what Phil was telling the CEO.
Yeah, exactly. He was
trying to, you know, run some tips over to the bookie.
He was trying to get a parlay going.
One of the questions, Tyler Davis, did JT intentionally miss that putt in the playoffs so he didn't alienate more fans by beating Phil?
Wow.
That's
so it was a PR move.
Yeah.
Smart.
Trying to get people back.
Very heady.
We talked about this
in the
last show.
Shout out to the Excel Sports Management Group for thinking that one through.
After the feedback, after him ejecting the fan last week, do we think he's up for some kind of harassment from fans going forward?
No, I don't think.
Really?
I think these things have such a small, short shelf life. Like, I kind of forgot about that before you mentioned it. Like,
yeah, but some people were, and we didn't record a podcast last week. We talked about it on the live show, but a lot of people were asking like our take on it. I thought, I'm probably not the person to weigh in. People are going to accuse me of being biased towards JT, which is not unfounded opinion at all.
I thought you were going to say, which is not the case.
No,
I was
no, no,
getting
no.
ready to jump in.
No. Let's not coat
let's move
this
on.
In. No, but I tried to, I don't know, like I said this, if it happened to Luke List, if he kicked somebody out, I don't think that's the big story from Honda.
Oh, totally. That's
it got
true.
So carried away. Yeah, was it? No, it didn't look cool. No, he regrets it. But if he could do it again, he would never do that again. Like, it looked terrible. My point was, like, these things happen during the course of tournaments. This isn't, it's a rarity that it gets caught on camera and on audio, but that's not unusual for that to happen. And that if you're trying to win a golf tournament with two holes left and there's somebody that's harassed him maybe three times within that hole alone, and you're thinking, I'm entering this cauldron, then I'm going to have to hit all these shots. Like, if I can just get rid of this guy, maybe I do it.
Yeah.
Sure. No, it doesn't look cool, but that's not the story of him winning
sure.
in a playoff.
That's
the part that, man, it just got way overblown.
As far as like to your original question about, is this going to happen more going forward? I think, I don't know. I look at, like, you were in Phoenix this year, right?
Yeah.
And I was there, was that last year or a couple of years? I think it was a couple of years ago now, when Bubba made the comments about, mm-hmm. you know, I'm only here because my sponsors want me to play this event. He got destroyed the next day. I mean, just obliterated by fans the next day.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you saw it this year. I mean, he's revered again.
It's back to normal.
Like, people, I mean, people just, I think if it was, maybe if this tournament was Valspar this week and it's kind of close to South Florida and, you know, it's the same, people are talking about their, you know, talking to their friends about going to the tournament and blah, 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 then maybe. But I think, I don't know. I just think these things blow over so fast that.
What about potentially getting rallied by a certain group of people, rambunctious group of people that are encouraging people to heckle him?
Oh, sure.
That could have an effect.
The stoolies, you're saying.
Oh, that you piece that together. There was a call to action by a certain stoolie to heckle him while he's getting groceries. Like, that kind of could have a downstream effect. It'll be interesting to
maybe
see.
Maybe. But I mean, Barstool's probably had five other controversies since that was said. I mean, I don't know how people keep up with all this shit. It's like, There's so many people to be mad at online that it's just, it's exhausting.
Oh, well, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Back in the States, you know, obviously that didn't have the effect in Mexico, but I think it is something to watch. All right.
Tampa's a pretty chill. Is he playing Tampa? Do we know? I feel like he's due for a week off here.
I don't know. He's got to exercise the demons of the miscut last year. And I don't know. It might be hard for him to go back to the place where he murdered that guy. So.
The driver off the deck.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm not positive. We should probably have that info. But it's late. It's Sunday night. Yeah. Let's wrap it at that. We were supposed to go like 40 minutes. We went like over an hour.
So. All right. Well,
too much to talk about. Yeah, it's too much fun. Let's get back to what's on tonight. The Oscars. Oh yeah. Who's going to win Best Picture? Somebody asked that.
Man.
Big movie guy, DJ Pie.
I am. I mean, I'd love to see Get Out win. I don't know. I seems unlikely. I would love. Big Randy and I were big Phantom Thread fans. Okay. I think that's too far out there. I think Shape of Water would probably win, which I was kind of into. People thought it was weird, but
haven't heard of any of those three movies. So
let's get back to Avatar talk.
Let's go. All right, thanks for tuning in. We're gonna have another pod this week with Justin Huber and Luke Guthrie. Probably come out on Tuesday. It's a good one. Some awesome, awesome stories in that one. I hope people tune into that. I think you'll like it. So, DJ Pie, thanks for coming back over and crushing it. And you guys have a good week. Thanks for tuning in.
See ya.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.